Give the gift that everyone wants, Omaha Steaks. Right now, save 50% site-wide, plus get an extra $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. Save on USDA-certified tender bacon-wrapped filet mignons, perfectly aged ribeyes, gourmet sides, and decadent desserts, delivered right to their door. Skip the stress. Order now at omahasteaks.com. That's omahasteaks.com, and use code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout to get an extra $35 off. Hurry, these deals won't last. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The Kennedy dynasty is the equivalent of American royalty, from powerful presidents and senators to wealthy philanthropists. The Kennedys have left their mark in every aspect of American society. But does the Kennedy name still hold the same power today? And what about a new pretender to the Kennedy political throne? We'll talk about all of that in a few moments' time, because Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway, columnist with the journal.ie, and a Boston native, is with me. Larry, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, first of all, we want to talk about just Trump's America at the moment. He held his ninth cabinet meeting yesterday, and he seemed to be struggling actually to stay awake. Despite this, Kristi Noem gave a bizarre tribute to the president, thanking Trump for preventing hurricanes.
And they have been absolutely fantastic. Sir, you made it through hurricane season without a hurricane.
Yeah.
And so FEMA, you kept the hurricanes away. So we appreciate that.
We appreciate that. Defence Secretary Pete Hegseth is also in hot water, as his decision to unleash a no-survivors strike, the so-called double tap, on a suspected drug boat seems to have divided his MAGA base. Newsmax, who've been totally supportive of Trump, their judicial analyst Andrew Napolitano, a longtime Republican, had this to say about that decision.
And it gives me no pleasure to say what I'm about to say, because I worked with Pete Hegseth for 7 or 8 years at Fox News. This is an act of a war crime, ordering survivors who the law requires be rescued instead to be murdered. There's absolutely no legal basis for it. Everybody along the line who did it, from the Secretary of Defense to the Admiral to the people who actually pulled the trigger, should be prosecuted for a war crime for killing these two people.
So you've got the Hegseth order. Whether that ultimately was inspired by Trump, we'll never know. But Hegseth gave the order to Admiral Bradley, who in turn instructed his people to double tap that boat, making sure there were no survivors. And Hegseth has also been called out for his hypocrisy over his investigation into the lawmakers who called for U.S. troops to ignore unlawful orders. You know, the six Democrats who said you must not obey illegal orders. Because in a book of Hegseth's published last year, which was called The War on Warriors, he openly admits to telling soldiers under his command in Iraq to ignore legal orders. He told his troops to fire at enemies even if they don't pose as a threat, ignoring, therefore, the rules of engagement in war. So, Larry, what do you make of all of this? Is Hegseth toast?
Well, we'll see. Trump has an extraordinary loyalty to Hegseth. Indeed, at one stage, there was speculation that of all the people in his orbit, that Hegseth was the one who Trump wanted to succeed him. We'll see how far that loyalty stretches. What is clear to me abundantly is, however you feel about Donald Trump, this guy, Pete Hegseth, was never qualified to be the Secretary of Defense. He was never qualified to have a command position. And we're seeing the results of both his incompetence and I'd also say his malfeasance as well. The idea that he's issuing a kill them all dictate is preposterous and contrary to every standard of law or common decency known to humankind. Now, whether he could face prosecution is a very difficult question. You know, I heard Andrew Napolitano define this as a war crime. Well, the United States is not at war.
So yeah, but if it's not a war crime, it's murder.
If it's not, and what I would say to people is that it does run afoul of international law. Any prosecution brought against Pete Hegseth in an American court will not be brought on the basis of international law, because sadly, international law means diddly squat in the United States courts. What it will be, could be brought under is maybe, possibly, the common law of murder. But perhaps the more compelling violation here is of the code of military justice. And this is directly contrary to that. So could he face prosecution? He could. It will all depend on a few legal issues and, as well as that, the extent to which Donald Trump is willing to go to the mat for him.
Now, in his book, he talks about the advice, the legal advice by a judge advocate general to his troops in Iraq, telling them in what situations they could open fire lethally and in what situations they could not. And he wrote that after that advice was given to the troops, he pulled his platoon aside and told them, "I will not allow that nonsense to filter into your brains. Men, if you see an enemy who you believe to be a threat, you engage and destroy that threat. That's a bullshit rule that's going to get people killed."
I suppose, look, you know, in a vacuum, these are horrible things to hear. They run directly contrary to law, to human
decency. But he wrote this in a book.
Yeah.
He wasn't trying to hide the fact.
He's not a very bright guy, Pat. I mean, that's the reality. Now, what I suppose he and his defenders would say is it can be easy for people removed from the battlefield to sort of say this is appropriate and this is not. But what makes this even more appalling, what has happened, is that these are straightforward extrajudicial killings, and this is an act against people who were clinging to a shipwreck. These are not people who pose a clear and present danger in which, okay, perhaps there might be a blurring of the lines around the law and the cold, hard reality of combat.
Okay, now, meantime, at that cabinet meeting, Trump was seen to be sleeping.
Yeah, and this could well be a case of you live by the sword, you die by the sword. I mean, Donald Trump made a huge issue of Joe Biden's
Sleepy
age
Joe.
And Sleepy Joe and falling asleep at the beach. Said lots of different things, and now, you know, it appears that he was dozing off. I don't think it appears. He clearly was dozing off during that meeting at various points. I heard one commentator kind of humorously point out, it does get boring hearing your ass kissed all day. But at any rate, he was there, and he was asleep and seemingly out of it. And this is a pattern, I think, we're starting to see, Pat, where his activity, although in fairness to the president, he is much more active, he is much more accessible than Joe Biden ever was, but there certainly has been a precipitous slowdown in terms of his activity and his movements and his work.
Now, the midterms are not that far away because we're talking about late next year. And although a week is a long time in politics, when an election is coming, time accelerates. So there are Republicans probably going to try and map out a survival course, which may or may not depend on Donald Trump, depending on where they are.
Yeah, there are a couple of conflicting realities.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
I think we are definitely starting to see among Republican elected officials, among Republican talking heads, some discomfort with Donald Trump and saying, look, this guy is at the end of the line. This is a natural process. You know, a second term president, as their term goes on, they become more and more of a lame duck. And perhaps some of what he's done and said has gone way too far for the small cadre of people in the political middle who decide elections, and they may pivot accordingly. But here's where they're in a tricky spot, Pat, and it goes down to something we've spoken about many, many times in this program, the extraordinary polling released very recently to indicate that 87% of ordinary grassroots Republicans are still very, very firmly in Donald Trump's corner. So when Republican electeds decide how to position themselves, they need to be very careful vis-a-vis that unwavering loyalty that Donald Trump still enjoys among the faithful.
And it depends, of course, on how Donald Trump navigates the next few months, whether his health holds up, whether or not he says more incomprehensible things.
Those will all be crucial, but I would argue to you that the most crucial thing will be around the cost of living and inflation. If there is some progress on that, then the Republicans have a chance. If there isn't, and if Democrats continue to play their cards right, and I think above all, that means recognizing America's a big place, recognizing that they need to be a big tent and that they need to nominate candidates who can win across the country. If there's no improvement in cost of living inflation and they play their cards right, then the Republicans should get a whooping next year.
And the Democrats have got to choose their candidates with care, recognizing their audience in any particular district.
We saw a very clear example of that yesterday in a district in Tennessee, you know, Tennessee being a solidly red state. The Democrats nominated somebody who was on record saying defund the police, that she considered herself a very radical person, even that she hated Nashville, she hated country music, all sorts of things that made it very, very difficult for her to win. She lost the race by 9 points, which I would still take as something of an ominous sign for Republicans, given how out there
she was. He won by 22.
Yeah, given how out there she was by Tennessee standards. But it points to the issue. If they nominated somebody more moderate, could they have made up 9 points? Probably not. But they would have been a lot closer than 9 points. And if you extrapolate from that around other states, that means moderates can win.
And that is scary for the Republicans. That 9-point margin is too tight for their liking, I'm sure, in Tennessee. They're glad to get the seat, but...
Yeah. I mean, what their pushback would be, they would say that Trump performed extraordinarily well last year, that it actually is more of a 10 to 12-point district. But again, it's a 10 to 12-point district in the context of a moderate candidate, that this leftist performed as strongly as she did and, you know, had no comeback to the criticisms of her, is indicative that there is a mood out there saying, look, whatever about the culture wars, we're more concerned about cost of living. And if Republicans continue to poo-poo that, they're going to lose badly.
Now, let's talk about the Kennedys. We know that the U.S. Health Secretary and vaccine conspiracist Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who's JFK's nephew, follows a long line of Kennedys in politics, but he's cut funding for vaccine research, called for a ban on abortion drugs, and claimed that autism can be caused by Tylenol.
There's aluminum in those vaccines, which, you know, operates along the same biological pathways and does the same kind of damage. It's extremely neurotoxic. And then there's other things, lots of other toxics in the vaccines that, you know, could be responsible. I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of scientific studies that looks at it, but nobody ever reports them. And everybody will say, oh, there's no study that shows autism and vaccines are connected. That's just crazy. You know, that's people... or not looking at science. Wi-Fi radiation does all kinds of bad things, including causing cancer. You know that. I mean, I'm representing hundreds of people who have cell phone tumors behind the ear. It's always on the ear that you favor with your cell phone.
So that's just some of the notions of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Then there is a man who's hoping to repair his family's legacy. It's JFK's grandson, Jack Schlossberg, who has announced that he'll be running for Congress in November of next year. He has long criticized Trump for tarnishing JFK's reputation by making his cousin RFK Jr. the health secretary.
He is dismantling that legacy. He's so obsessed with the Kennedys and the Kennedy name and the Kennedy brand that he caged one and put it in his cabinet, a rabid dog in his cabinet, put a collar on my cousin RFK Jr. and has him there barking, spreading lies and spreading misinformation.
So, Larry, the Kennedys' legacy, I suppose, I mean, how is it in Boston?
Well, I mean, look, you know, for me, as from a Boston political family, the Kennedys were always the kind of bigger, larger-than-life figures as we grew up. And one of the truths about the Kennedys that mightn't be known to an Irish audience, but certainly is that a great deal of distance sprung up between the Kennedy family, who had their eye on the national prize, and the Boston Irish on lots of different things. A lot of the Boston Irish would have felt like the Kennedys left them behind, that the Kennedy family, in the pursuit of, you know, supremacy in the Democratic Party, moved too far to the left. And this was very difficult for lots of Boston Irish, my own family included in many ways. Where are they today? I mean,
Going back to that, just Senator Ted, though, was elected again and again and again.
He was. And that was despite his support for forced busing to desegregate the Boston school system, in which his vote did go down. But he retained a loyalty, and he retained, and a lot of that was down to the extraordinary legacy of his two brothers who were assassinated. And what I will say about Ted Kennedy is, though, even though arguably he's the least talented of the three, his impact on American politics and American policy, both at home and abroad, was far greater than either of those two legendary figures. Mm-hmm. Probably because of their early assassinations, but also because Ted Kennedy proved some of the naysayers wrong and did some Trojan work in the United States Senate.
I mean, you got to remember the so-called curse of the Kennedys, and they've had so many misfortunes that you can understand why this superstition about the curse of Kennedy. It's not true, of course, but I mean, this superstition there. I mean, the JFK was killed by maybe Lee Harvey Oswald, maybe by the CIA. Who knows? Robert F. Kennedy assassinated in 68 by Sirhan Sirhan. And then you've had some younger generation Kennedys who died by suicide in crashes. John F. Kennedy Jr., who flew his own plane and killed his wife and his wife's sister in the process when it crashed.
And it comes right up to the present day. We just saw this past week, Jack Schlossberg, who you mentioned, his oldest sister diagnosed with a very rare form of blood cancer, doctors giving her 12 months or so to go. So there's an extraordinary amount of tragedy that family has had to endure over the years. And, you know, yeah, they do have a marvelous track record of public service, but there is a dark side to it as well.
Now, let's talk about the man of the moment, who hopes to be the man of the moment. There is a seat in New York being vacated after many, many years by a guy called Nadler. And this guy, Jack Schlossberg, has eyes on it.
Yeah, it's interesting. And what I've been saying to people is that the fact that his name is Jack Schlossberg as opposed to Jack Kennedy might actually be an advantage in that district.
Because he's Caroline Kennedy's son.
That's right. Because the Schlossbergs are a longtime, well-known New York family. They're also Jewish. That district is very heavily Jewish, very heavily concentrated Jewish population there. But his candidacy for this, it's a very crowded field. And he has degrees from Yale and Harvard. But in terms of real-world accomplishments or holding down a job even, there's very, very little track record to go on.
Done there. A bit of journalism.
A bit of journalism. So, you know, is he going to be a strong candidate? Yes, for all the reasons I've outlined. Money will not be a problem. But he definitely is not the favorite in this race. There are others who hold elected office, including Jerry Nadler's former constituent services person, who arguably are better placed. But this is an attempt, I think, to keep the Kennedy name and the Kennedy legacy going. And just by point of reference, you mentioned I'm from Boston. The last time this was tried was Congressman Joe Kennedy in 2020, who went for a U.S. Senate seat that was there, ran against a Democratic incumbent, and was trounced, was beaten badly. And again, the real blowback there was having the name Kennedy, being part of that family, doesn't resonate to the same extent that it once did. And if it doesn't work in Massachusetts, I'm not convinced it works anywhere else.
Well, John F. Kennedy Jr., had he lived, might have been the best prospect because he was clearly a bright guy. He was also doing journalism. He had his own magazine. Handsome fellow, very smart fellow. He would have seen be the obvious heir to Camelot.
Yeah, I think a lot of people saw that. You know, obviously another tragedy. The way that he died, we'll never know exactly what the future might have held in store for him. But I think all eyes, you know, whether in America or here, will still be watching Schlossberg to see what happens. If he doesn't win this, and again, you never want to say never in politics, I'm just not sure where the next Kennedy in American politics will come from. If this is a loss, I don't see where it happens.
And of course, Robert F. Kennedy, I mean, using the name Kennedy has tarnished it just by his lunacy. I mean, he's a crazy guy.
Yeah, he's, look, I don't know enough to say, but he buys into crackpot theories. And I don't think it should be underestimated, given the platform he's long had, but given the platform he now especially occupies, the amount of bad he can do in that role, I think is really, really disturbing.
Now, the other thing is Trump's preoccupation, as Schlossberg himself said, he seems to, you know, he wanted to have a Kennedy in his cabinet. He has this fascination with the Kennedys. He becomes the chair of the Kennedy Center, and to the dismay of many of the people who were involved in that center and the dumbing down of the performances that are there. And then he destroys the Kennedy Rose Garden, which Jackie Kennedy did with the help of Bunny Mellon.
Yeah.
And Mellon, of course, as someone has mentioned in the Epstein dispatches, it all goes round and round.
Yeah, I mean, I think Trump, in some respects, because Trump does have a fascination with power and money and all of that, I think that that's probably responsible for a lot of his reverence for the Kennedy family. Indeed, somebody like old man Joe Kennedy, you know, who made his money during Prohibition, all that started with
nothing. And was a bit of a fascist.
Yes, was recalled from his position as ambassador to Great Britain because he thought Hitler was a great guy. But I do believe that those would be the people who Trump would admire. And again, because he's fascinated with power and money, the Kennedy name, everything would mean an awful lot to Donald Trump. So, and I think you'd also view it as something of a coup to attract one of its leading lights, for good or for ill, into his cabinet.
Isn't it interesting the parallel between Joe Kennedy's fascination with Hitler and Trump's fascination with Putin?
Yeah, you know, I don't know exactly what to ascribe that to, but there is certainly, I think, the strong man and this idea of the person who, you know, pushes forward and gets his way, and that's the way it goes. I think Donald Trump admires that. I don't think he's in anywhere near the same category as Hitler or Putin, but there's no question that he does have authoritarian tendencies.
And, of course, Joe Kennedy was a dictator in his own family.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, look, again, I mentioned the dark side earlier, but, you know, when it comes to what happened to certain members of that family, there's a lot of blame, I think, that needs to be shouldered by the late Joe Kennedy.
Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway, columnist with thejournal.ie. Thank you very much for joining us in studio.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.